get ready. It's another long episode of Chicago Beer Pass as special guest Chris Jacobson joins us to talk about the recent Dark Side event and a little insight into what's happening at his brewery. All that and more on this week's episode.
Yeah, because, you know, you got a cork popped out, boom, and it just flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
The legend, Mr. Pete Crowley. I love Pete Crowley, man.
How's that beer? That's what you think it is.
It'll be like the stuff you hear. You ever go to, every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this.
Raw, raw, raw!
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Hey, I'm Nick White.
And special guest in the studio.
Yeah.
Back again.
What is this, like the third time?
Third time.
We got Chris Jacobson from Chicago Hardcore Craft Beer in the building. What's going on, man?
Not much. I actually made it down here at a reasonable time. Last time I was here, I was late. I actually left my house earlier because I figured I'd rather sit and be a half hour early today instead of being 15 minutes late. Because it coming from the burbs, it's like it's a 10-minute window.
Right.
You never know what you're going to get after that.
And then Nick rolls up in here.
And then here I am, then I show up late. Yeah, and I was 10 minutes late. Yeah. I was out hanging out at Hailstorm today.
Oh, nice. Well, yeah. That's perfect because we're drinking some of their beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going with the, what is it, the Southside Irish Red Ale.
Yeah.
Tis the season. I think Chicago's celebrating St. Patty's Day this weekend, I believe.
Yeah, even though right? This beer was packaged back in September.
Yeah.
So. No, aren't they?
That's weird, right?
Wouldn't they be celebrating next weekend?
Is it this weekend?
This weekend's the 11th.
No. Yeah. So when is the St. Patrick's Day start?
St. Patrick's Day is the 17th, right?
Yeah, but does that
That's Friday.
That's Friday?
That's next Friday.
So
Chicago doesn't care. We got to. I think the parades are this weekend.
I feel like it's this weekend.
Oh. That's completely
No, it's like super early, I know, but.
Yeah.
Because I figured with St. Patty's being on a Friday, that would be like the key time for
Perfect
everybody.
Reason. Yeah.
But
I think they get after it before the actual day, unless the day's on a weekend.
And on the day.
They just celebrate it for a whole fucking month.
And then they paint that river green, and it just stays green.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
All year. Yeah. So what is this? We're drinking a red ale from Irish, Hailstorm down in Tinley Park.
Irish Red, yeah.
Irish Red.
So what were you doing over at Hailstorm?
You know, just hanging out, you know. I've never been to Hailstorm.
Right.
And, you know, but I got roots out there, you know. The house I grew up in, my mom still lives out there. So I was just out there, you know, saying hi to my ma.
Okay.
And I'm like, dude, I need to do something. So, and I've been to Open Bottle. I've been to 350.
Uh-huh.
You know, those are the closest ones to her, you know. So I'm like, dude, I haven't been to Hailstorm.
Okay. So how was their space?
I dug it. It looks a lot like the same format that, where was I? What's the crew that does that owns Brixie's? That Imperial Oak. So Imperial Oak, Solemn Oath, Miskatonic, that same general theme.
Okay.
Right? Where it's like it sits in an industrial park and it's like, you know, really intimate bar space. And then you got a nice view to the brewing process as well as all the barrels.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And cats.
They got cats.
They got cats there?
Yeah, they got two cats, Thunder and Stormy.
Okay.
And they have a really big dog, Brutus, the Great Dane.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a fun space.
What'd you drink there? This one?
I did not drink this one. This was, but they have 16 beers on draft.
No, that's too many.
That's a lot of beer.
It is a lot of beer.
I think we got going with two that I'm blanking on, but Vlad the Conquistador, which is their Russian Imperial Stout, but it's got like chilies, vanilla, cinnamon, and agave.
Isn't it really hoppy, though?
It's oddly hoppy.
Okay.
Yeah, nice cinnamon spice, too. It's really friendly. Oh, and some triple IPA called Dominatrix that apparently they cleaned up at the Indiana State Fair does like a beer festival at it. So they won a couple awards for Dominatrix triple IPA at that thing.
Damn. Right on. Okay.
Yeah. It was a good time. I had never been there, so.
I think I actually had Vlad last Friday. I went to Elmhurst to check out a place called Red Arrow Tap Room.
Is that the one where they're doing the whole, what is it like?
You serve yourself.
You serve yourself thing.
Yeah.
Oh, they are? Okay.
Like, so there's no bartenders. Like, you are the bartender.
You just get the, like, card, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. It's all by the ounce. That's kind of interesting.
That's spreading like a rash, that concept.
Oh, this is the first place I've actually checked out.
Bar makes a lot more money. They're not dumping out any beer mm-hmm. that they would usually be like, oh, that's all foamy. I don't want to give that to you because it's poor presentation. But right. you've just paid for that. So as a consumer, you're like, I can't waste that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and like tax and tip is also worked into the by ounce. So ooh. Like when you can see your total. So if you drink $20 worth of beer, you go up and you pay $20 and you're out the door.
Okay.
So that's kind of
cool. Nice. Yeah. Cool. Last week we kind of skipped talking about Dark Side.
Yeah.
In preparation or to save it all for this, right?
Right. Right. We wanted to have Chris on. Yeah. And talk about the 5th anniversary of Dark Side, mm-hmm. which is like a celebration of dark beers.
Yeah, all dark beers.
All dark beers.
It's this year actually kind of turned into somewhat of a stout fest, but it worked out pretty well.
I'll pull up the list while we're talking here.
It was this was year number 5. We wanted to do. It was definitely the biggest one that we've done. We had the biggest pre-sale, and like we did, you know, everyone got a glass and. Like a bag and stuff, so everyone kind of was able to make out with a couple of fun little tokens.
Yeah, that was the first time ever, I think, for the commemorative glass.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I worked closely with Jared this year. He got a little bit more involved. Usually, like he's the beer buyer there.
Okay.
So usually, I would kind of build the tap list and just say like, hey, these are the beers that I'm getting from these breweries. This is what we're going to be doing. And then last year he had a couple of things that he wanted to kind of put into the mix of things. And then I know that he was chomping at the bit to do have some Bourbon County. This was the first year that we actually had Bourbon County on yeah, draft.
As well as a Prop 16, right?
Yeah, and then we also had the regular from 2015.
Okay.
So he took a lot of reins and had some had a couple of things that he really wanted to have on draft and was very influential in rounding out the beer list. And I know that he was also holding on to a couple of things just for the event.
Yeah.
So it was really good to work with him and get everything to really come together on the beer side of things. And I thought, you know, 24 solid beers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Imperial Blood from 18th. We weren't running down them all, but just a few that jump out at you. The Coffee Dino S'mores, Perennials Abraxas. Big Hugs. But then, surprisingly, what was the first beer that kicked? We were talking about this recently.
Four Hands Madagascar.
Yeah, Four Hands Madagascar. So you got like Surly Barrel-Aged Rye, Barrel-Aged Darkness, and all these other well-known beers. And then the first beer to kick is Madagascar. I thought that was interesting.
Well, that's actually it's the first beer to kick in the past 3 years.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a solid beer, though. It's one it's one of my favorite brews. That's actually why I brought one of their beers. This is a dark beer while we're talking about Dark Side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's an Imperial Stout that was released in 2014 for the anniversary party, which their anniversary always has something to do with Wizard of Oz. Okay. So this is the Woodsman. And it's a half barrel-aged stout mixed with a half stainless steel fermented stout. I haven't had it for a while, so... Brought it to share with you guys. But yeah, that Madagascar has kicked first the last 3 years.
Yeah, most people I talked to, you run into people you know, and that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. You're like, hey, what are you drinking? And a lot of people, to my surprise, were drinking Madagascar out the gate.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. That was my first pour.
See?
Yeah, Four Hands makes some really nice light beers and then all these really awesome dark beers too. So they kind of run like a good lineup.
Yeah, for sure. You know what beer that, my first full pour was Perennial Abraxas. That beer just brings me joy. But the one that really caught me off guard as far as like just really, really, really digging it was this, the Pollyanna one, man.
Oh, really? Barrel aged personal chain letter? Or was it
No,
the
not
Ernest?
The chain letter, but the Ernest 1953. It's an oak aged stout with bread. It was a bread stout.
With bread?
Yeah.
With bread.
Bread.
Well, actually...
Too bad there's not a Brett Porter. You know, they should have just said it was a Brett Porter. You know?
Well, that actually was barrel-aged for, I think, a year to 14 months in barrels with, I think, 10 strains of Brett.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of different characteristics and different Brett strains going on in there. So that was that's actually a part of their Fortitudes series, which I think it was the first one. So
I dug it. It had the integrity of like an oak aged heavy beer, but it had these playful botanical notes that kind of reminded you of like a root beer, like an adult root beer or something like that. Uh-huh. It was really cool. It was really well done. I was very excited about that one.
So have you had this Four Hands before? I haven't had this one.
I had this one at the release party back in 2014, but I haven't had it since. I had it on draft, and I've been hanging on to bottle.
Okay.
Did you get around any games this year?
Actually, no. I didn't play any games on the actual date of the event, but I had a bunch of leftover tokens from some of the game the bags and stuff that people got with their ticket that I wanted to return. So actually, when I came down that Monday for the Saved by the Max thing, we swung over there.
That was a bizarre Monday night.
It was an interesting event. We stopped over there afterwards and dropped off all like the bags of tokens, and then I was able to play some games then. So, I mean, that day is usually just making sure that everything goes smoothly, everyone has a good time. I'm doing it for the consumers, for the attendees, for everyone who shows up, for the guests. So I drink a little bit of beer. I welcome everybody at the door, do the tickets and all that type of stuff. And there was only one year, I think it was like actually the first year or the second year, that I was actually behind the bar bartending because everybody was like overrunning the bar. But for the most part, you know, I don't really get to play too many games. I'm usually talking to people. And
yeah, at Darkside, you get to, well, at Emporium, they have this really unique kind of like taster glass. It doesn't look like a traditional beer glass. It looks more like a glass you would serve like a cocktail in.
It's almost like a rocks glass.
Yeah, like a rocks glass. You know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
I didn't even know you could do tasters. Is it only for the event?
Maybe that's just their cocktail glass.
I think it is only for their event.
Okay.
And then so then you get to walk away with the collector's glass, and you didn't have to like rinse it out or worry about using it.
Yeah. Nice. Okay.
It's a nice touch.
Nice.
That was a good party.
So what has changed since previous Dark Sides to this one, and anything like moving forward you're going to now tweak or anything?
Well, it's kind of like an ever-evolving thing. I mean, previously, you know, we didn't have Goose Island a part of it, so that was definitely one major change in that we might go forward.
What do you got against Goose Island, bro?
Well, when we first originally started the concept, you know, 5 years ago, it was meant to be just like a hardcore craft beer event. And then we ran into some snags, and Goose Island actually was going to be a part of it, and then they kind of flaked on us.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we ended up making it a solidarity event, which is strictly what is labeled craft beer. And at that point in time, there was the buyout, and the whole thing was going down. So then this year, I definitely brought it back to just being hardcore craft beer instead of a solidarity sort of thing. And so that's why Goose was then a part of it. Because I mean, at the end of the day, good beer is good beer, and you're not going to, you can't turn away from that. And, that was one of the main big differences this year. Also having Jared, a little bit more excited and on board to talk beer and bring it in. And, I don't know, as far as how it's going to continue to evolve and change, I think it's just kind of be a year-to-year sort of basis. I mean, whatever kind of, like, strikes me at the time or strikes us at the time to make it a little bit more exciting. The glass thing, I don't know if we're going to keep that up. I mean, it was fun for the 5 year, but maybe bring that back at the 10 year if we're still doing it. But I don't know. We'll see what continues to happen. This year was definitely, like, one of the bigger, more elaborate, heavy hitter sort of tap list with Abraxas and Prop and all that. So I think next year would definitely be, I'd like to get a little bit more, like dark sours on there, kind of expand the style, palette a little bit.
Stouts.
It was fine. I mean, it was really good, having all those crazy, awesome beers, but it definitely was very stout heavy.
Yeah.
And you know, as much as I really like those beers, the whole idea behind starting the concept was actually being able to have people explore what dark craft beer is, and that's from like black IPAs to porters to stouts to black ales to barrel aged stuff.
Like a nice range of what mm-hmm. flavors can come with a beer that just looks really dark and intimidating.
Right, because everybody for the longest time, like, even when you said craft beer, they're like, oh, I don't like Guinness. Right. And it's like, well, that you put a dark beer in front of somebody and they're like, yeah, is that Guinness? Or then, so the whole thing was supposed to squash misconceptions about dark beer. And,
right.
Yeah. Especially with, this year with no Goose Island Stout Fest, this actually was like a nice substitute for
Stout for Fest. That type of,
Dark Side Stout
yeah,
Fest.
Yeah, for that type of party, you know. A couple of the beers that stood out, because I just did the, I didn't get around to games, we just put all the beers in the windowsill and just kind of sampled through them all. There's a group of maybe
you were
like
a lush.
Six of them. We lushed out on a Sunday. Sunday fun day for sure. Mm-hmm. The Solemn Oath, most important beverage of the day. I really dug that one. That's their coffee milk stout with sweet orange peel. There's a lot of good stuff on here, man. Founders, Lizard of Kais. That's a bizarre one. It's got a lot of like fruits in it.
See, I wasn't sure what to expect out of that when they first came out with it. Yeah. And I thought it was actually going to fly off the shelf. And now, I mean, it's still sitting everywhere, but It's got a lot of blueberry in it, and it's got a lot of cocoa. I mean, it's a cocoa, vanilla, blueberry bomb.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy it because it's everything that's on the label you taste. That is true. Which is amazing. Like, usually blueberries are kind of like a little softer.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like peach. You usually don't even taste the peach, or taste whatever fruit that they actually put in it, but I thought it was really well done. Anyway, I didn't mean to cut you.
No, it's a good injection. Pipeworks, Coconut Jones Dog, Perennial Sump, that was one of my favorites, the coffee one. And Barrel Aged 1050.
Okay.
First beer to kick at FOBAB, according to the volunteers. Hmm. Yeah. Which is weird, because you could, that's like, oh,
yeah, that Sump was over at Uppers and Downers.
It was Uppers
as well.
And Downers, too. Right on, man. A lot of fun stuff at Emporium, man. Mm-hmm. So.
But Nick, did you go last year? Have you gone to every year?
I've been a lot.
Okay.
I think I missed it. I think I missed last year. But I think I went to the previous years.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes, I think it's a good fest because it's all about that Sunday groove.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Well, you're all about that because you can't.
Because I can't do anything on, because my Saturdays are jammed. Saturday. You know? Yeah. Yeah. So Sundays are right on my alley. And then, like, it's in that strange kind of dead spot where, like, you know, football's over. We talk about that. Football's over. It's cold out. You know, the fest season hasn't really kicked into gear yet. So you got this, like, window where you're just kind of, like, you're itching to get out. And this is a good slot. That's a good slot time-wise. And then it's that Emporium, which is, like, one of many concepts I wish I would have come up with.
Yeah.
At the top of the list.
The whole barcade thing is just awesome. I mean, we actually started the Dark Side when their opening year. And I was approached with the option of working with them and doing an event. And at the end of January every year, I have a video game party at my house. And it lasts 12 hours. And it's just beer and junk food and video games. And it's like 12 or 13 systems set up all throughout my house.
Wow.
And so when I had the opportunity to marriage beer and video games on a larger scale that I can invite a ton of strangers to, I was like, this sounds perfect.
It just makes sense, man. So it just makes sense. Yeah, it was groovy, man.
Nice. Sorry I missed this year. I think I stopped at the last year or the year before. I'm blanking on which one I went to. Yeah.
They all start to run together.
Yeah, sure. Well, awesome. Anything else we want to chat about on Dark Side before we get into other drinking of the past week?
Well, I think we hit the core stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
We got the trailer out of the way. All the good stuff was in the trailer. We just knocked that out.
Nice. Right. Nick, did you make it to anything else this past week?
I made it to a couple of things, man. I went to Wild Blossom Meadery down in Beverly.
Okay.
So that's like 91st and Western-ish.
Doesn't they say like the Chicago's only meadery or something?
Yeah, because like these other...
Wants mead.
No. Mead is weird, man, because mead is honey wine, and beer people like mead, but not a lot of beer people just get as excited about, you know, like grape wine. You know what I mean?
You have to have the right stuff too. I mean, I've had some decent honey wine and decent mead, and then I've had some really shitty stuff. But then, a friend of mine, who actually was the guy that came with me to the to the goose thing. Mm-hmm. He's been making mead for a couple of years now, and I mean, doing everything from Melimals to like piments and barrel aging stuff, and like, I mean, he's making some of the best mead that I've ever had, and to the point that like the barrels that he's using, I'm taking for test batches because I figured if you know, my project can also extend into mead, can bring him on, actually make mead, and then reuse barrels in just much like wine barrels.
Yeah.
And age beer in it, and that's just again, like it just comes down to like, oh, have you ever had like a really good like cab? It's like, I don't know, I've had some cabs that really suck. Okay, well then you haven't had a good one.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know. I want to talk to these guys more, but like with the mead guys, it kind of sounds like mead is a little more versatile in that respect in comparison to wine and in comparison to grape wine. So like the mead guys are doing barrel aged stuff and they're not afraid to like spice these you know, and put like different flavors and different variants. And with grapes, it's kind of more like
it's delicate.
It's more of a delicate purist thing. Like why would we put, other than the glug stuff, like why would we put anything in the wine kind of thing?
Yeah.
But mead's like all bets are off. You can do whatever you want with the mead.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's so all Gruitt's approach and all that. I mean, there's far more thing. Otherwise, it's just water and honey.
I mean, right?
Right.
It's pretty fucking boring.
Snooze Fest, yeah. So they had Chocolate Honey Buzz is my favorite one from them. The best one I think I make, the best one they make is Sweet Desire.
Okay.
I think that's the bourbon barrel aged mead.
Okay.
It's just mead with just bourbon barrel aged honey wine, right? There's one called Pirate's Blood that's like three different hot chili peppers. And then there's a Sizer, which is like a,
okay.
I want to say it's like a cider mead hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was carbonated, it was on draft, but you had a chance to get the still one, the non-carbonated one, and I wish I would have done that.
See, I like the size of, like, there's a Michigan.
Yeah, maybe, it, like, the guys who make Totally Roasted, maybe, the Vandermill guys?
No.
Oh, like someone else?
Yeah.
Vandermill made a, they're like a sizer.
They're a mead.
Bee Nectar?
Maybe, yeah. That, yeah. Yeah, they make really good stuff. I like their stuff.
You know, I was with a group, and they were saying, man, if you really like these, you really need to try Schramm's up in Michigan, like Southwest Michigan. So then, you know, after that, you know, the post game was, you know, a bottle of like Red Courant Schramm's meat.
Okay.
And there was like a huge difference in me. Because like my only exposure is Bee Nectar and this place, Wild Blossom. And, you know, but the Schramm's guys, it's like a lot more, it's a more interesting interpretation of mead, like, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's more thoughtful. Everything's luscious and bold, and you know what I mean? They say, and the mouth feels different. It's just like really, it's really well balanced and awesome. I don't really know what else to say about it. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, Schramm's is top-notch stuff, and it's actually really hard to come by. And the crazy thing about them, like, they actually have a mead called Heart of Darkness that is just like the fucking bee's knees. I actually haven't had it.
I see what you did there, honey. What? The bee, oh, man.
Pun intended. Anyway, so no, I know I haven't personally had it yet, but I mean, it's like the biggest rage when it comes down to like Schramm's meads. And Ken Schramm has like, I think it's Ken Schramm, like the main guy has like these Belgian cherry, like Chesterbeek cherries trees that nobody else has. So that's like one of his like main things to put him over the mark. But that mead is made 5 gallons at a time. And it takes forever to ferment out. I mean, like close to a year. And they literally fill up like homebrew carboys 5 gallons at a time, and then they just let it go. And it's just, it's crazy, but it's so good.
The Schramm's was groovy, man. Like, okay. And then the last point about the mead stuff, they have really fun like bottles, like the, you know, it's not just like a bomber or like a, you know, 12-ounce bottle. There's these really odd, like, I mean, they're the regular sizes, but they just got these oblong shapes to them.
You want to do that again?
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? They all come in different shapes and sizes.
they just have different shapes and sizes.
Yeah, and
to this, you guys are giving me a complex about it to try to describe this meat, man.
Well, you know, it's
the glad the bottles are nice.
Okay.
Yeah, fun bottles. Not.
So are we gonna see mead geeks now?
Dude, we need to get some mead on the show. Seriously, like between the Bee Nectar and the Schramm's stuff, pick one or two. I had one at a Beer Friends Giving that was a ginger one from the Schramm's guys, and now I'm like, well, shit, what else do they got up?
Well, I want to bring some of this stuff that my friend makes, like, or if you ever make it out to the burbs and actually
Algonquin-ish?
Yeah, yep.
There's like a ramen joint in Mount Prospect that, you know, is always showing up on the list that I want to go hit. So
Mount Prospect and Algonquin is a little,
oh, that's not the same. It's not like,
No.
They're not like neighboring towns?
No.
Once you're out there.
Once you're out there, though, I mean, like...
Once you get past Chicago, I mean, Springfield or fucking Detroit, it's all the same thing, right? No, I think, I mean, Mount Prospect is more like the Rosemont O'Hare area.
Where is Algonquin?
It's a good hour outside of the northwest of the city.
I'm way off, man. That's just like the other show we were doing. What was it? It was Unani, and we were saying, oh, yeah, that's right by Alarmist.
Right by Alarmist.
But it's like, no. But not at all.
Not even close.
But not at all. So you got Mead Barrels. And the last time you were on the show, man, you brought a really cool, what was it, Dower from the brewery project you're working on. Yeah. You want to talk about that a little bit, man? What's going on with the, is it Antithesis Brewing?
Antithesis, yeah.
What's going on with Antithesis, man, since we last saw you?
It's a slow process. But, yes. I mean, it's anybody who's ever tried to start a business knows the slow going process of it all. But then anyone who's ever tried to start a brewing business knows even more of like
even
how
slower.
Oh my God. It's a nightmare. I mean, that's actually putting it nice. It's actually a fucking nightmare. Okay. That's what it is.
There are children listening, Chris. No, there's no kids. There's
you
no
need to be 21 or over to listen to this podcast.
There's really no reason to listen if you're not 21 or over.
Oh, I'll try that when I'm 21 in 14 years. It's coming along. Right now, there's a couple of things that are happening and possibilities that have come up that have allowed us to continue to grow our brand and keep the name alive without actually having our brewing space. But with our brewing space, we have an odd sort of a stalling point right now because we have an opportunity to take over a brewery, which is in the stages of possibly changing ownership or changing hands. And so like we have the possibility of doing that. And obviously instead of trying to start from scratch, from ground zero, being able to walk into a brewery that's already established, already TTB approved, everything out the door.
What are some of the reasons you wouldn't slide into that brewery?
From like a business standpoint or just from
just period, just like why wouldn't you just say, all right, we're going to do this?
Well,
like what are some of the things that are some of your concerns about?
Well, I don't really have any concerns outside of the fact that like it's not 100% available yet.
Oh,
and so
that's
if
a concern. Okay.
if it was available, which we thought it was actually going to be available earlier. Late last year, possibly even last month. But because it's not available yet, it's kind of put a slow on the progression of things because we were going to start from scratch. But our goal is to still open up in Elgin,
right on.
Which
is right next to Mount Prospect.
Which is right next to
Detroit.
Yeah, definitely. It's just like it's right there. It's a hop, a skip, and a jump. So we've had some run-ins and we've been slowed up with waiting for this to either fizzle out or come to fruition.
Okay.
So
is the space this other space is that near Elgin at all?
No. Right. But we would
You're
definitely
trying to fish for what it is, aren't you?
I just want to know what's going on.
We would
what's the cross streets of where it was?
We would take what's the longitude and latitude? What are the coordinates? So if we were able to take it over, we would start probably developing an Elgin still, and we'd probably start with the tap room side of it because then we can have the brewery not only fueling the tap room up there, but we would also be able to fuel the tap room in Elgin while we're also able to build out and get licensing and everything for Elgin and then eventually just kind of make the move.
Right on.
But as of right now, things are in like a constant state of flux and we're just waiting for like the dust to settle to see what's going to happen.
It makes sense. The Motorola guys were saying that their space, it was like a 3-year project. You hear that quite a bit.
And I think Gary Gulley's taken at least 100 years.
Gary Gulley's in like been development since, you know, since before the show launched. Yeah. I mean, these things take time.
Absolutely. It's been 4 years now since we came up with the idea of actually going through with this, and then it's actually been 2 years since we really started putting the pieces together. It's been a year since we had like our LLC filing and everything to actually become a business. But then we've also been brewing collaborations. We've been doing some Gypsy Brewing, We've got some projects up in Detroit. We actually have a beer that's going to be kegged on the 13th, and then that's going to start hitting. But a lot of that stuff is all just Michigan-only release.
That's what Out Color did for a long time. Their first three projects were with, like, you know, Psy Project and Three Floyds and Haymarket. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like that seems like the natural route to launching a brewery.
Well, and it's just kind of keeping the – it's growing the brand just as much as, you know, kind of keep staying relevant without actually having your own space.
Up to this point, what have you been focusing on? Like, has there been, like, a specific focus style-wise? Because, like, you brought the stout, and I like the stout because it wasn't, like, a full year in the barrels. It was, like, almost, like, half a year, right?
4.5 months.
Yeah, like a barrel-aged stout that was mm-hmm. just in barrels just long enough.
Right.
Like, is that a direction you're going right up to this point with the beers?
Yeah, I mean, as of right now, like, we focus on, like, rustic saisons, farmhouse ales, anything, wilds. Essentially, we also do, like, the big, robust stouts and barrel-aged stouts and stuff like that, too. Essentially, you know, a lot like a lot of people are doing, we didn't sit down and decide we're going to do a brewery and we need to do this style and this style and this style. I mean, we basically follow, like, the Stone and the Founders. And
we just kind of do whatever we like to drink.
Yeah, like, we produce beers that we like to drink and that we find interesting, because as beer drinkers and beer geeks, I mean, I kind of feel like once it gets to the point that we like it, you know, other people will like it too. And if they don't like it, there's probably something else in our
there's
portfolio.
There's something wrong with them. No.
Then you are just the problem. Yeah. It's one of those things where our whole focus and the why of what we're doing is more so of what we're doing. And so why we're doing it is because we wanted to brew beers that we can't get. Like, that I've never seen, up until recently, I've seen some gin barrel from age stuff, but we ferment and age a beer in gin barrels. We ferment it in gin barrels.
Oh, right on.
And so there's a lot of that type of stuff that, like, this is what I want. This is what I want to try. This is what I want to do. And, you know, we're not, for me, it's not driven by, I mean, obviously a lot of the people, like, you're in business to make money. But money is not, like, the end goal. It's more of just, like, the fuel to keep it going. And the whole purpose is to enjoy what we're doing, enjoy what we're making, because I want to drink this beer, so I'm going to make it, and then I can drink it. And in the process, everybody else gets to drink it, too. Yeah. And, you know, we're going to focus more on the tap room and local distribution, because we're going to self-distribute for a while. I mean, back in, you know, 10 years ago, like, the end game for a lot of brewers was a lot like the music industry. The whole thing was trying to get a record deal, trying to get the biggest mass, you know, distribution possible. Same thing with the beer industry. The end goal was to try to get as much distribution as possible to drive your business. Now, 93% of most breweries' sales, especially small breweries, is on-site consumption or on-site sales through their tap room. So whether they're buying bottles or cans or whatever out of the tap room, or growlers, actual.
You hear some of these guys say, hey, it's all about, there's been lotteries in place, you know, there's, like, these special one-off brewery releases.
Right, Beguile's got
the CSA or
CSA
something.
Kind of thing for beer.
Yeah, well, yeah, because the market's so crowded, that's really, like, one of the ways you can stand out.
Well, yeah, and distribution's not the end goal anymore. Like, it's not
dude, how many shelves can there be at Benny's? You know, we talk about that a lot.
Exactly, and you know? When you go in, it all just kind of, like, muddles together, and if mm-hmm. your beers are sitting on a shelf, and we produce beers, especially like our saisons and our stouts and stuff, is I've always really enjoyed what time does to beer. And if I could build that into our brand and our product, that'd be fantastic. And that's what we try to do. So if it does happen to sit for a little bit, it's only going to continue to develop. And I mean, like Brett and Lacto and all those, like, just wild yeast continue to develop. And then obviously large stouts, everybody likes to cellar those things.
That's
too.
That's true. I had a Matilda 2013 recently.
Okay.
And I actually dig that more than I dig, like, fresh Matilda.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, the Class of 88 one. That was my favorite one from that night. You were at that night.
Yeah.
The Safe to the Max thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's cool, man. So, Antithesis Brewing.
Antithesis Brewing.
Is what we should be on the lookout for.
All right. Sounds good.
That's, there's an event. There's a couple of events and festivals coming up that we are kind of halfway.
Who's the crew in Detroit? Can you talk about them?
There's a couple of things going on in Detroit. for us right now. It's almost like an extended arm of Antithesis down here. So there's
Rock City.
We did a beer at Old Nation Brewing, which is about an hour outside of Detroit. I don't even remember what town it in. It's in, but anyway, so we did an imperial stout, an oatmeal imperial stout with cocoa nibs. So that's going to be released probably in April. And then right now I'm in works with Motor City Brewing. They're actually downtown. I want to say downtown Detroit. And there's going to be like kind of like a collaborative brewing project that is essentially a brewery that has another gypsy brewer and then a hometown brewer. So it's going to be me and these other two guys getting together and brewing a couple of things. We're working on like a New England IPA recipe right now.
I had a growler from them once. It's the Clear
Growlers. From Motor City?
The Clear Growlers.
Well, and they've been around for a long time. Are you okay?
No, man. I couldn't say Clear Growler.
Clear Growler.
Yeah. No, yeah. They've been around for a while. I have friends that grew up in Michigan that came here, and they're like, oh, yeah, we drink this all the time. And yeah, and that was kind of their Goose Island almost.
Well, and they were the second craft brewery, I want to say,
I didn't realize they were that
in Michigan. I mean, Bell's was the first.
Yeah.
So they've been around for a while, and now we're kind of working together to do some interesting stuff.
I wish the South Side Irish Red had more of the like toffee caramely notes we like.
It's very thin.
It's kind of old. It's hella thin. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why you would package this in September to release
March. Let that rip in February, man. What are you doing, man? You know? Mm. That's cool, though, man. Yeah, I was wondering what happened to Antithesis because I really dug I really dug that stout you brought. I think it was called Dour?
It's Dour or Dour.
I think it's spelled Dour.
As far as the brewery and how we're going to call it, it's probably going to be, we're just going to stick with Dour. But I mean,
I dug it though. I thought I dug the flavor profile. I thought it was really good.
Well, and it's not one of the things that I really like to do and just kind of stay focused on, especially when it comes down to barrel aging and barrel fermentation, is that I feel that a lot of breweries these days are kind of doing it a little rushed. Like they don't have a relationship with the liquor or the spirit that was in the barrel prior.
Okay.
And they might say, okay, we just got these barrels and we have this beer, let's throw it in there. Whereas when we made Dour, the rye barrel just seemed like it made most sense because it had a little bit of that spice flavor to it. You still got a decent amount of the oak, and the flavors were complementary to the beer that like I wanted to make for that barrel.
I hear that.
So it was big on chocolate, big on roast, a little bit of coffee character that would then be dulled down with the sweetness because of the rye spice, but then would also be accentuated by
like
the oak.
Like a marriage between the right. Oak. Yeah, I can dig that, man.
And I think a lot of breweries these days are leaving
the status quo to have a barrel program.
Got it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's driving program. A lot of what you're referring to.
Yeah, and if it's we've got X amount of barrels from maybe three different distilleries, you know, then it really comes down to blending. But then do they actually blend it, or do they say we want every last drop to maximize our yield? And sometimes they leave it in too long, so it becomes over oaked, or they leave it in too too young, and so they take it out and it's like way boozy and it's like way too big on the actual barrel flavor or bourbon flavor. So I've had some really not good barrel aged beers from some breweries because I feel like they just went for it.
Yeah.
And
instead of designing a recipe for the barrel, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Dour was in barrels for 4.5 months because I was tasting through the barrels, and when it was ready, it was ready. It's where I wanted it to be.
It just made the most sense to have it come out at that point.
I mean, I would think, like, you know, Goose does Bourbon County for, like, 9 to 10 months.
9 to 10 months, and then we hung out with Siegel 1 year, maybe, like, 3 years back, and they talked about, like, you know, some for a year, some for, like, 8 months, and then we blended back. Blending was a big part of what they did to just get a certain flavor profile. Mm-hmm. And speaking of New England IPAs, I had a...
gross.
You hate them.
They're just dumb.
Why are they dumb?
They're dumb.
They're just like, They're just this muddy mess of it's not interesting. I don't find them interesting.
Well,
at
it's
all.
The, it's the next biggest thing as far as IPAs go.
It, no, it's now. It is now. It's
right. Well, I mean that's it is the next biggest.
I don't enjoy. Yeah. I don't really enjoy black IPAs, and I have not had a New England IPA that I liked.
Really?
I hear that. I had one from Microphone and Transient called Exqueeze Me. It's like 7.5%, and it was just like, it was like drinking adult fruit juice, this fucking IPA.
Mm.
I mean, in a good way, though.
Like, yeah.
I was genuinely surprised at how, I didn't know what to expect. I'm like, man, this smells like fruit. And then,
okay.
I really dug it.
Well, I mean, the base foundation of a New England IPA is essentially, you know, wheat malt, oatmeal, and then two row. I mean, it's really simplistic.
That's where it's all coming from.
And then
maybe that's what I liked about it. Like, I don't think there was any actual fruit in it.
Right, right. Well,
it's like it felt like there were adjuncts in it, but it was, but there weren't any.
Well, and that comes in with the hops that are used, and then the hop schedule. So I mean, you've got a lot of like Amarillo, Citra, Eldorado, Mosaic, a lot of like the big fruity, citrus kind of hops, which I mean, for the most part, those are all flavoring hops.
Yeah.
But they're also used as bittering hops as well. I mean, I like to at least throw in like a Columbus or a Centennial or something to at the beginning of the boil. But a lot of that, the additions are in like post boil and like the whirlpool, so it's all flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And then. The biggest thing too, when it comes down to New England IPAs, is actually the water profile. Like the water.
Yeah, the Forbidden Root guys were saying that. They were saying like you need like a softer water to pull this off, kind of.
When in West Coast IPAs are bigger on sulfates, and then the New England IPAs are bigger on chlorides because the chlorides is more of a malty. It boosts the malt in beer, and then the sulfates boost the bitterness, and so it's kind of like a little bit more tipped, so it's more malty. But then it has enough sulfates that it actually accentuates the hop bitterness without being too bitter, and that's where you also get like the citrus notes out of it too.
Yeah, I dug that one. I hadn't liked them up to this point.
Okay,
but that one I really
liked. Haven't had the right one.
It was good.
It's just like mead. You just haven't had a good one.
It's just like mead. Oh, and while you're cracking this other bottle, I just want to give a shout out to the other event I went to real quick. It was the Sink or Swim in Logan Square. They had an event for Blue Point.
Okay.
Blue Point is the brewery that AB purchased right after Goose Island.
No.
No?
After 10 Barrel.
After 10 Barrel.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brad. Brad Chmielewski, everybody. It was the, so Blue Point is in Long Island, right? And apparently they're the next brewery to go to all 50 states.
Okay.
So they're
behind this more than 10 Barrel.
That's what it sounds like. You know, we're talking to the guys, and they had like five or six guys from, you know, Patchogue, New York, like way off on the end of Long Island.
Uh-huh.
And they're saying, hey, man, you know, we've been hanging out, you know, playing with clams on you know, off the coast of the ocean since we were 5 years old. And then we started getting into beer, that sort of thing. They brought five beers. They were established in 1998, and I think, you know, the porch drinking guys brought up a really interesting question because, you know, Lakeshore Beverage is who these guys are being distributed by, and they're saying, well, we kind of hope that this doesn't go away the way that some of Lakeshore's other beers sort of fade away. Like, I don't know if you remember Speakeasy from California.
They were
from San Francisco. There was a huge launch party in Wicker Park, or even our friends over at, you know, Wiseacre down in Tennessee. You know, he's from Chicago, and then but he's from Tennessee. Started a brewery down there. You know, they had this huge launch.
But Wiseacre beers are better than Speakeasy beers.
Wiseacre beers are better than Speakeasy beers. But Lakeshore is starting to get this. You know, there's starting to be a theme here where they launch these brands in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Is that Lakeshore's problem or is that the brewery's problem?
I don't know. That's why I'm bringing it up.
Okay.
Because I'm like, I mean, these guys, their beer plays really well with seafood. You know, and I think in this town, you'll win all year as far as seafood joints go. You know, if that's your angle.
Well, it's and I mean it's hard to find like a really good seafood joint. So if you do have one, or if you know of one, and then you have a beer to go with it, then you just got that on
a lot of times. And I'm thinking like, you know, just right in like the Loop area. You know, whether it's like, you know, Shaw's Crab House or, you know, or you know, Hugo's Frog Bar, which shares a kitchen with you.
But
know,
those places are tourist places, right?
Those places, for the most part, are tourist places.
Yeah. So as a tourist to a new city, you want beer from that city. You don't want beer.
It's hyper-localized.
You don't want beer from New York. This is why Speakeasy, Wiseacre may work out because Davin has roots here and like started brewing here, so the beer people know him. But that's why I don't think – I haven't had enough Blue Point beer. But
this is my first time.
Just being from New York and you're in Chicago and like, why do I – no, I'll drink Goose Island over Blue Point with the same money, but
– No. This is why I brought it up because I'm like, well, I wonder – even though these guys are cool and these beers that I had were delicious, I wonder in this market in particular, like, how long is this going to last?
Just like Lakeshore had Sweetwater.
Forgot about Sweetwater. Yeah, Sweetwater would be another good example. I mean, the beers are fine, but it's just like what lane can you create in the most competitive market in the country? And that's where we are.
Chicago drinks Chicago. I'm sure in later you have the beer news about how much we drink Revolution.
Yeah, so. Right.
Well, it also helps that like Revolution that's on pretty much fucking everywhere. I mean, I was actually having a conversation the other day where it's like usually when you go into a place and you look over their tap list, you know, they always have some Two Brothers and they have, you know, usually either they usually have IPA, like Revolution's Antihero.
Yeah.
And so it's almost all the places that you are looking to have a beer and you're like kind of passing up some of the, you know, BMC stuff. And you're like, well, I know.
BMC.
BMC.
What's BMC?
Bud Miller Coors.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Sorry.
So it's just you know what it is, and you know it's a good standby, and you can just always go for it.
That's true. I hated that the fist was on everything. You know, it's on the tap handles. It's on almost every single bottle, even or can, even on the Antihero, you know, Incredible Hulk colored fist.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I hated it, but it makes total sense when you look at those numbers. Yeah, where they talk about outside the big three, Rev is the one that's really like waving the flag for craft. Like they're kind of penetrating that more than any other locally produced brewery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but yeah,
that's why Blue Point, we'll have to see. I don't know.
We'll see. I feel like that night was good and I was excited for them.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a, the Toasted Lager, I think, is their flagship, and that goes with the Blue Point Oyster. Blue Point refers to an oyster variant. But then after that, there was this, Beach Plum Goza.
Okay.
Which was like a 4% like kettle sour. And then, because we're drinking a sour right now, which is actually pouring pretty good. But the beach plum refers to like just like a berry that grows alongside shrubs, alongside beaches on that ocean, Atlantic.
Okay.
You can see me, I'm like pointing everywhere. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But yeah, it was a cool party. So we'll see what comes next from them.
So their beers are more, I don't know much about them, but they're more
I don't know
niche,
much about them either,
niche-y
man.
Niche kind of beer.
I wouldn't say niche, but definitely like geared towards seafood. So like there's an oyster stout, you know, that's low hanging fruit, right? There's the beach plum goes, there's the toasted lager, and then there's a seaweed IPA. You know, that really dry, it's basically like a drier, an IPA with a really nice dry finish to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're really leaning in that direction with the way they're naming this stuff. And really, you know, what it goes well with, they're kind of promoting it as something that accompanies seafood.
Okay. I guess we'll have to see how much money Anheuser-Busch puts behind it. Yeah. That's going to probably say a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of former Goose guys are at Blue Point. So like Todd Ashman, who was a Goose, you know, marketing guy, he's running the show over there. And Mark Hegedus, who used to run the
Goose. I think a lot of people left when they bought him. Because they were like, well, we're done, we're out, right?
So yeah,
they
had Tim Bro had the same thing. Where like, when Thomas was like, well, you know what? We made the sale.
Not to say
I'm
like
put all the money in his suitcase, and I'm getting the fuck out of here, right?
I'd say they had to like, all right, well, Goose has been with us for a while. Let's take him over there and show him like we're still okay, and we can. Yeah,
I think when you look at that portfolio, right, of all the breweries that they bought, yeah. I think since Goose is one of the first ones that got bought, they're the ones that kind of usher in. You know,
let me show you.
Welcome. They're the welcome committee, for a lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? Yeah. But the party was cool.
Cool. Yeah. Swing and Swim is a cool spot.
Yeah. That's the only other thing I went to.
Okay.
Woo.
Hard day for you.
Chris Jacobson. What are we drinking, man? This is bottle number two here. And this looks like it might be from the Antithesis collection, no?
It is. All right. This is actually called, it's Sour Project number two.
All right.
This was aged in, it's actually a blend of two-thirds sour golden ale and then one-third sour red ale. And then it was aged for about 9 months in barrels. And then it was pulled off and aged for about 4 months on cherries. And then this actually, the last keg of this actually made it over to Rockwell's late last year.
Rockwell's Grill up in on the far north side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple of bottles left of it just for sharing and stuff. So
it's everything you want in a sour, man. We talk about that all the time because we had the peach
from Upland
last week, and you know we let it sit for a little bit, and all those fun peach sour flavors came out, but initially the carbonation was in your face, and mm-hmm. it was kind of hard to like just really get to what you wanted, which is ultimately those Sour Patch Kid kind of flavors, you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we get a lot of that here, so that's fun.
Well, I definitely wanted to, like with this one, the Sour Project number one was actually a Sour Blonde, and that was highly acidic. I mean, it was almost like nail polish. I mean, remover. I mean, but some people really look for that in sours. Like if it's not puckering, then it's not really a good sour.
You're not doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I like to do everything from highly acidic to extremely approachable. Something like this that's a little bit more balanced. And I wanted this to be something that people that are just now getting into sours could approach it and say, you know, there is fruit. There's something very delicious about this and kind of refreshing. But yet people that are sour fans would actually like it as well.
Yeah.
And so I was going for more of like a middle ground balance of it. And it does kind of open up, you get a little bit more of the fruit. And it does kind of sour up a little bit more as it's in the glass. But
yeah, it's groovy, man. Definitely plays in that space between beer and wine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is like always my favorite part of like just the whole sour genre, you know. For sure. Yeah. Right on, man.
Before we get into the events, the last thing I made it to was I was over at Half Acre the day Double Daisy Cutter was released. I picked up some cans, which
cans now.
We'll probably drink next week.
Right on.
Show, so.
Right on. So that was at the original Lincoln Brewery.
Right, yeah.
All right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, the new space, I think. I wonder when they're going to, if they're, you know, if I were them, I would just do parties at the old brewery, right? So we'll releases. Mix it up.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think that probably they can only sell at the old one right now. They have a store, right?
Yeah.
So they have to get licensed to have a store.
Forgot about that.
Along with all the, yeah.
I haven't been to their new facility. I heard it's huge, bigger.
We did the show up there in 1 week.
Yep.
They've got a full wood shop up there, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Wood shop?
Yeah, they got a wood shop. Well, you know, for all their handles and stuff. And
oh.
They like wood artwork, too.
Yeah.
Oh, they're big into wood.
Yeah.
Gabriel used to do that.
Yeah. So
they love wood.
That's a fun space. It's one of the few spaces I think like in city limits like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's available, you know.
Mm.
It was cool.
So what do we have coming up this week as we approach an hour here? We gotta get through these what should people be checking out?
I'll be super quick for you. Let's just focus on one event.
One? Okay.
Friday, March 10th, is Chuck Norris's 77th birthday.
Okay.
And the good folks at Local Option are going to celebrate with Chuck Norris Day.
Okay.
So you know how they get down. Doors open at noon, and it's a 26-beer tap list. All the usual favorites from them. Seven of their beers, Scratch, and then Pipeworks, Three Floyds, and they got four Alesmith.
Oh, they're really Scratch.
They got a love affair with Alesmith for some reason.
So they got Scratch.
They got Scratch on tap as well, though. One of the few places I think around town has probably got Scratch on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll focus on that. Next week on the 16th, at Pazzo's downtown is a night with Perennial. So they're gonna have they're actually gonna have 13 Perennial beers on.
Damn.
Yeah, including Vanilla Abraxas, along with nice. Variants of Sampana and some other goodies.
Cool.
That's a good one too. So. Yeah.
Definitely check out both of those and, yeah, have some great beer.
For sure.
Then, as far as beer news, before we wrap up here, I know we touched on this Revolution drinking.
Yeah, it was a website called BevSpot, I think, and they listed, like, hey, this is what these are the top-selling, like, spirits and beers in Illinois.
And U.S. U.S. and, or market and then Illinois.
Yeah, like the nation and then the local market.
Did I pass out during this? Wait, you guys were already talking about this?
We mentioned how Revolution
is. We just
is
tapped it a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we just talked about how Revs really like among local breweries.
Ravel sells Bud Light. Yeah. But Miller is the most drank in Chicago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a specific like lens. Like it's through the Bev Spot lens. Right?
Yeah.
Because if you talk to the two brothers guys, you know, they beam with pride about how, like, you know, they're the only brewery in the state, period, that's got like 7 SKUs in the top 50. But they're referring to like
retail.
They're referring to retail sales.
Yeah. This is at the bar.
Which is, you know, this is good.
Revolution was like the third most drank beer in Chicago. Yeah. Right.
It is everywhere.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, as far as IPAs,
it was like Miller. Then what was the second?
It was probably might have been like OG Budweiser, right?
No. It was something else, like right above it. Just sneaked a little ahead of it. I forget what it was.
Bud Light Platinum.
Bud Light Platinum.
Ice House.
So good. Well, actually, a couple years ago.
It might have been Old Style.
It might have been Old Style.
Yeah. It's an Old Style kind of city. I mean, 40% of what Miller produces actually comes to Chicago.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Freaking nuts.
Yeah, I mean, like Miller, even the founders guys. I know you're going up to Grand Rapids pretty soon. Mm-hmm. They say Grand Rapids is a central point between Detroit and Chicago. So they basically view Chicago as their number one account. So they're all in when it comes to like promos and releases. Like they consider this their home.
Nice.
Yeah, so we get a lot of what they put out.
Yeah. So, news. Should we dive into news?
That's what we're doing.
Oh, sorry.
We're already there.
This is the news. Welcome.
This is the news.
Welcome to the news section.
Is this Chicago Beer Fest? All right. What else you got? Let's see. Day of the Living Ales results. Yep. Right?
Okay.
So there were 28 breweries, and then Day of the Living Ales gives out 3 main awards. One's a Golden Tut Award. That's for the cellar masters. They pick out, like, you know, a beer that exemplifies, you know, quality and the best example of the style.
Right? Yeah.
We'll run through the 3 winners here. Bronze was Revolution Brewing. They had a Grodzki called Kazmarez. Right?
Okay.
I guess Grodzki's a smoke beer. That's my guess, right?
Sounds
like smoke beer.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Silver was Alter Brewing. Out in the burbs, Ulterior Motive IPA.
Right next to Mount Prospect, huh?
Right next to Mount Prospect. Beautiful, you know, Bolingbrook, Illinois. We totally don't know where this place is, but yeah, Alter.
Just naming suburbs.
You guys are hilarious.
Oh my god, these are not facts.
Alternative facts.
Yeah, Alter Brewing, Ulterior Motive with silver. The gold goes to Buckle Down.
Oh,
Buckle
nice.
Down, Copper Pot English Brown was the winner.
Cool.
For the King Tut Award. And then they give out 2 other awards, one for beers under 6%, the other for beers over 6%.
Okay.
Real quick, that's just a runner-up and a winner. So Copper Pot was the winner, and the runner-up was something called the Vera Pistachio Cream Ale from Hot Butcher.
Oh, nice.
No, actually, sorry, I lied to you.
We had the pistachio.
It's ATB. That's why I thought it was Hot Butcher. It was actually ATB Around the Bend.
Oh, okay.
Won that award. Yeah, and that was for under 6%.
Okay.
And then over 6%, the runner-up was Spiteful Brewing's Chocolate Oreo Milk Stout.
That sounds awesome.
That sounds fucking delicious.
Interesting, okay.
The winner was the rye barrel-aged Might Meets Right from Temperance.
That's really good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know we touched on the idea of cask beers a little bit. I was talking to Ken Huntermeter about this and just that. It has completely fallen off the map.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, like, the arcade, headquarters, they were doing a cask ale event.
They were, but then, like, you had Owen and Engine, who had, like, 4 casks on.
Yeah.
Goose Island, Clybourne used to have, like, 2 or 3 casks on.
Yeah, they did. It was one of the few that had cask on all the time.
I think all these places just were not selling these cask beers. I don't think people... You had to... already been super nerdy and then go in and want a cask beer and then they sit for too long and then people are using them to let's throw a bunch of chilies in these and see what happens. They're not a true representation of engine beer or cask beer is supposed to be.
That drives me crazy about, like, you know, Firkins especially. I mean, what you can do, like, I had an event a couple years ago called Cask and it was building like 14 different firkins from different breweries.
Where'd you do it? Just real quick.
I did it at Rockwell's.
Oh, right on.
So I contacted all the breweries that I wanted a part of the festival or the event, and I sent them like different variations of what I wanted to do, and I said I want this beer with spiked with this, and a couple of them ended up just. There's a couple of breweries that ended up just sending a cask that they wanted that was like dry hopped or something. But to me, a dry hopped firkin is like the just taking like phoning it in.
Right.
Like everybody can just put more fucking hops into
That's
something.
That's not the point.
Right.
It's like, about nuance and delicacy.
Yeah, let's really fuck something up here. You know, like yeah. I wanted like a brown ale with cocoa and coffee, and then I wanted a saison with rosemary and thyme, or a rosemary and mint actually. And there's some really good approachable flavors, especially after infusing beer with ingredients and knowing like what it does to it. So that's what the whole thing was, is to show like what adjuncts can actually do to beer.
It's true. And to your point, yeah, like it's a lower. It's served at like a warmer temperature, and then it's like the forced carbonation. It's not forced carbonation. It's more like
It's like a natural carbonation.
It's a natural carbonation. So, you know, so by definition, like flavors that would get lost on tap, you know, you have a chance to shine here. Those flavors that are harder to capture. So to your point, yeah, they should be experimenting with things that are not as common.
Right. Don't just throw more hops at it.
Americans, man. Fucking Americans. Just
throw love more hops at it.
Yeah, well. All
right. One more bit of news, liquor.com. I don't know if you guys ever go there.
No.
I barely know her.
Ew.
That's a bad joke.
The 263 bars that matter most. This is like their annual review of bars around the country. So 263 is so bizarre, right? There's another list that we're not going to get to this week, but it's like, yeah, the 171 best non-barrel-aged imperial stouts.
Somebody chimed
that,
in.
That one last one. That
my mom said I had to include this place.
It's such a random list, man. Okay. You know, and then, but yeah, I wanted to touch on the Chicago beer bars because, you know, it just gives you a chance to revisit places that most people haven't been or haven't been in a while, right? So these are the Chicago entries in the 263. Clark Street Ale House, Delilah's, Lawman and Eagle, Sportsman's Club.
Didn't Clark Street Ale House change the name?
Did they change their name?
I thought, remember we were at that event. They said they got bought.
I remember the event.
Yeah.
I don't remember them changing the name.
Okay, maybe they didn't change the name, but the concept completely changed, listen, right?
Comiskey Park, fucking Sears Tower. Marshall Fields.
It's still Sears Tower. I don't care what those
fucking Clark Street Ale House. I don't care what they're calling it.
I don't know if it's called Clark Street Ale House anymore, but.
Oh, and the Matchbox.
Okay.
On 770 North Milwaukee, 75 years old, killer margaritas, 460 square feet.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's the list of Chicago bars that matter, according to.
Some liquor. Jerk.
According to a handful of jerks at liquor.com.
All right.
Yeah.
We should get out of here before we offend anyone else.
We should get out of here, man. Chris Jacobson, man, anything you want to shout out, man? You want to promo? Tell people where they can find you, that sort of thing?
Just mainly like Facebook and Instagram, actually. Instagram, Hardcore Craft Beer. Facebook, Hardcore Craft Beer. I don't really do Twitter. I do Twitter, but you can still find it because if I post it on Facebook, it automatically goes to Twitter. But I just don't get it. I've never understood Twitter.
That's like me with Snapchat.
I think
like
it's Brad, fucking
Brad
weird.
Brad is a very good Snapchatter. I can't fucking Snapchat.
I've just recently got on Snapchat, and the whole time I'm just like, if I don't have my sound on or if I blink, then I miss it, and I can only replay it once, and God help me if like I didn't get it again, you know? So, Facebook and Instagram are the two main ones if you want to get the full story.
Right on.
Basically.
Yeah, you've got a lot of cool stuff going on. So, glad you came out. Glad you shared these beers with us, man.
I'm happy to be here. This actually might have been my fourth time. I can't remember.
It's possible.
I think it was twice at the old place and twice here.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll have to go back in the archives and find that out.
Check the tape. Nick, how about you? Where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Nicosio.
And I'm on Twitter at BRad. Chicago Beer Pass is on Twitter at Chicago Beer Pass. But I think Facebook is the place where we post the most stuff, right?
Mm. You're actually a lot louder when I'm looking at the EQs. You're a lot louder than you are to the mic.
Yeah. Well, I also, I moved a little closer, so I'm starting to clip a little bit, you know.
That's at / Chicago Beer Pass, and then the website chicagobeerpass.com. All the episodes get posted there, links to iTunes, Stitcher, the YouTube version as well. And we'll be back next week with another episode.
Cheers.